Welcome. Welcome to everyone listening all around the world, all across the United States. We're coming to you live from the Rocket headquarters, which tonight is the Coast to Coast AM studios right here in Los Angeles, California. Standing in on this Sunday evening, I am your host, Jimmy Church. And tonight, my guests are Billy Carson and Dr. Kenneth James. Now, right after the break, Billy Carson will join us to talk about his company and the development of a new rocket engine that they are working on, as well as other technologies that will help everyone on this planet. And later on tonight, Dr. Kenneth James and I will talk about Carl Jung and the book that Jung wrote and released back in 1958 called Flying Saucers. And although Jung died in 1961, his views on life, personal development, and UFOs are probably more relevant than ever and may surprise you. So hang on for that. It's going to be a great conversation. And now I want to move on to the events of yesterday. Because yesterday I woke up to the news of the passing of Aspen Pittman. Aspen was the founder of Groove Tubes here in Los Angeles. He was a dear friend of mine going back 30 plus years. And he was a huge influence and pioneer in the music industry with production, microphones, guitar amps, tubes, both live and recording. Aspen was a name that absolutely everyone knew. And he was somebody that everybody had respect for. And he died alone doing something that he was so passionate about, which was he was towing one of his classic cars 2 days ago to an auction, lost control, and crashed. He died. I last spoke to Aspen a couple of months ago, and I was across the street from his studio getting in my car to have it washed. And he called me. And it was strange timing, I know. But as we talked, I told him I was staring at his building, right? Two people in the modern era that are talking on phones with walls between them instead of being face to face. And we laughed about it. And he asked me to come over to the studio. You know, you're right across the street, and I had to pass. I had stuff to do, and we agreed that we would get together soon, and we hung up. Well, I realized today as I speak to you that I missed the opportunity to see him for the last time. And yeah, it sucks, and I get that. But at least our conversation was a good one, and right now that's all I've got. But then right after I got the news about Aspen, the story started to break about Jeffrey Epstein. And my first reaction to that was, you know, no way. What? You know, suicide. That's impossible, right? Well, my next thought was about Coast to Coast AM. And that was yesterday, and I'm hosting tonight. And I thought, do I cancel my guest? Do I do a full show on Epstein and the mystery surrounding his apparent suicide? And then I snapped out of it. I came to my senses because Epstein's death alone in a protective housing unit of the federal jail in Lower Manhattan, that story is going to be covered for years to come. It's going to be covered in the form of books and documentaries and theories. You see, it doesn't take a tinfoil hat to jump to conclusions here. It doesn't. It's a very basic question that everyone is asking right now. And I do mean everyone, from the White House all the way down to you, which is this. I mean, how does the most high-profile inmate in the federal custody right now, a billionaire charged with sex trafficking, with a list of people around him a mile long that are influencers on this planet, how does that person... How is that person allowed to commit suicide the day after court released documents? It's crazy, right? I'm serious. The level of crazy is almost too much to handle. And by allowing this to happen and breaking the story in this manner has opened the door to every possible conspiracy theory you can think of. There will be Jeffrey Epstein sightings around the world for the next 20 years. Think about it. Epstein may rival JFK, Amelia Earhart, Jimmy Hoffa, Elvis, and D.B. Cooper combined. Which is why I'm not doing a Jeffrey Epstein suicide show tonight. This is as far as I'm willing to go, and I'll leave it to others to do the research, to investigate, and to publish those books. Because I think my book and documentary will be about Aspen Pittman. I was talking to Anna, my engineer, before the show tonight. And we were talking about how many days do you actually have on planet Earth? And if you live to 70, that number is around 25,000. That's it. 25,000. If you're 35 years old right now and listening to me, you've burned through 12,000 days. You've got 12,000 left. What have you done with your life? Well, do what I do. No negativity. Be happy. Be kind. Live without regrets. Just like this show tonight. It's going to be another great one. Turn down the lights. Get ready. This show is another Sunday Night on Coast. I am your host, Jimmy Church. You can follow me right now on Twitter at JChurchRadio. You know the drill. Twitter is always live to my left. I look forward to your questions and comments. You can post them right there. And if it's good, maybe your tweet will get read on the air. Enjoy the bumper music tonight. I ask for all of your help today. And I think we got a pretty good list together. I couldn't get it all in. You know, I probably had 1,000 responses from all of you, and I've only got room for so much music. But it's all good. All right, later on, we're going to open up the phones for both Billy Carson and Dr. Kenneth James, because it's another Sunday Night on Coast, and I want you to be part of this conversation. Let's do this. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, and I'll be right back with my first guest, Billy Carson. This is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, standing in on this Sunday evening. Tonight's going to be a great evening. We've got Billy Carson here. Later on tonight, Dr. Kenneth James. We'll be talking Carl Jung and UFOs. It's not going to be what you think, so stick around for that. We will open up the phone lines as well. But right now, it's Billy, and Billy Carson is the founder of Forbidden Knowledge. He's the author of The Compendium of the Emerald Tablets. It's a great book. I wrote the foreword to it, so... You know, all right, so check it out. And the expert host, of course, on Deep Space, a new original streaming series on Gaia. It's got a few television productions in the works right now on a couple of networks. Maybe we'll get into that, too, as well. Forbidden Knowledge has over 2 million followers and subscribers throughout social media. And Billy is also the CEO of First Class Space Agency based in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And his space agency is involved in research and development of alternative propulsion systems and zero-point energy devices. He's also the founder of Pantheon Elite Records, a contributor to Thrive Global, and is a registered international journalist. His website is right there at Coast to Coast AM, ForbiddenKnowledge.com. I would like to welcome back to Coast, Mr. Billy Carson. Billy, good evening. How are you?
Hey, good evening, Jimmy. So glad. It's just so good to be back on Coast to Coast. It's been a while.
Yes, it has, but, you know, you're out there in the community, and you're always, you know, out there at various conferences, and, of course, my other show, Fade to Black, so you're always here with us. But tonight, this is a subject that you and I, over the years, have not talked about, which is your space agency and your company. I'm going to disclose a little bit to the audience, if you don't mind, Billy.
No problem, man. Go ahead.
Billy has kept me informed on each stage of the development of what has been going on with the company. And we've been waiting for this moment. And so it's not that we were keeping it a big secret. It's just that things had to develop as we moved along here. But tonight we're going to talk about it for the first time, and I'm pretty excited about it, Billy.
Oh, man, this is some incredible stuff. I'm really pumped up, man.
Well,
this is like, you know, a dream come true.
Well, you're touring the world, megalithic sites. You're writing, you're researching. Your stuff on Thoth is some of the best out there right now. And we know that side of you. But this, what got you into rocket engines?
Well, that's a great question. You know, when I started looking into the Anunnaki, to be honest with you, and discovering how human beings had been oppressed over many thousands of years, and still to this very day, that system that was installed eons ago is still oppressing mankind and holding us back from moving forward, I realized that there was a need for, you know, the advancement of this civilization into the next level. And I wanted to be a part of it in some way, shape, or form. So back in 2014, I filed a corporation for a first-class space agency, knowing that I wanted to be involved in private space because I felt like it was the next big push for humanity. And I wanted to go ahead and, you know, get my foot in the door, so to speak. And so I filed for that. I filed for the top secret clearance in private space. And I started the arduous process of getting, you know, getting into the Pentagon system, to the SAM system, so that you can get put bids in. Also into the European Space Agency system to be a vendor, and also to put proposals and bids in as well. So I'm now listed in both websites. You can go to NASA and go to the SAM system, which is on the Pentagon server, and also you can go to the European Space Agency and go to their approved vendors, and you'll find my company there as well.
Now you haven't gone to the dark side, have you? You're not working
No.
for the man.
No, that's a big misconception that a lot of people have when they hear that.
Right.
I don't work for NASA. I don't work for the European Space Agency. I'm also registered and listed with NATO and approved by NATO, by the way. But, yeah, we're not working for them. In other words, there's a lot of space agencies in America that people don't know exist. There's probably over 80 of them, but only a few have launch capability. The rest are providing different types of technologies and services and products and directly to the technology to the space agencies. And also by also putting in proposals and bids to the European Space Agency, for example, let's say I come up with a fantastic idea for a new type of radiation-hardened computer chip circuit board. I can propose that scientifically and professionally to the European Space Agency, and they will actually fund up to 60% of that project for me to develop it if they can, you know, figure out a way that they can utilize it in the future somewhere, somehow. They may never use it. But if you can come up with that, then they also put out bids for things that they are specifically looking for, offers for things they're looking for people to put bids on, and that gives you an opportunity as a tech company to come up with the R&D on it and say, okay, I'll bid that I can create this technology for X amount and go up against other companies bidding as well. And if you win the bid war, then you can get the funding to develop that technology. And it could be something as simple as of you know, revolutionary fiber optic wire that connects, you know, satellite technology to an array. I mean, it's just various different things that are out there. But it doesn't mean you're working for them. It means that there's an opportunity for you to generate income from them, yes, but that you don't work for them.
Now, is it? It's my understanding we don't manufacture our own rocket engines here anymore. Right. We were getting our rocket engines from the Russians. And now, we have to utilize the Russians to get our own American astronauts up to the International Space Station. We don't have that capability today, do we?
No, they've done away with the space shuttle program. Now, just the public space shuttle program has been dismantled. But we still have space shuttles that go up all the time. It's called the X-33 and the X-33B.
X-37B.
X-37B, yes, I'm sorry. Yes, X-37B, right. Military shuttle. Those go up all the time. And the amazing thing about them is they're known to have, if you do the read on them, they're known to have the most advanced navigation technology ever to exist by NASA spacecraft. They go up for, one of them went up for 700 days. That's obviously a very long time. That's a couple years, basically. And supposedly it was just orbiting the planet. They don't tell you where they really go. They're all top secret missions. I don't think they're going to send a payload ship that big up into space just to do a couple of orbits for a couple of years. I think that they're really going places. And I think most likely they're taking supplies. In my personal opinion, they're taking supplies to Mars.
I thought it was unmanned, or is it mostly unmanned?
They tell us that they're unmanned, but there is a cabin there that a human being can sit in, and navigation is there for them to use as well.
Yeah,
so it's unmanned.
Yeah, it always looked big enough to me to have a crew on board, but they've always insisted that the X-37B is unmanned.
Right.
Now,
that's what they say.
Now, let's get to your engine, and of course, we'll pick this up after the break. The engine that you are developing is a special engine that has more power, less fuel, weighs less. Tell us about it.
Well, it's a ferrofluid vortex engine, and the ferrofluid that we've gone with is mercury, which is a liquid metal. And to be honest with you, just like a lot of the current space agencies are utilizing information to develop tech from ancient texts, we decided to do the same thing. So if you research ancient texts, you'll discover that in the Mahabharata, for example, they had these Vimanas, in the Vimana Kasastra, they had these Vimanas, or these ships that would fly above land silently, and they supposedly use these mercury engines. So we've been experimenting and doing R&D on mercury for now a few years in a very small scale. And we discovered that a lot of that information was actually true. Now, through the R&D, we discovered that if you take the mercury up into a torus, a steel torus, and then you bring it up to an RPM using magnets on the outside that actually create a magnetic field that prevent the ferrofluid from touching the actual metal because it can't touch. Bring it up to 60,000 RPMs or greater, and then add 250,000 atmospheric pressures to the torus field and electrify it, you get an anti-gravity bubble. Now, it doesn't completely erase gravity, but anything within that bubble will be significantly, the weight will be significantly reduced. So what we're trying to develop now is, initially, is a something that can be added to an existing rocketry system. For example, SpaceX has a rocket system. So if we can add something to their existing system that they can install inside the payload area that would reduce the weight of the payload, now they can reduce the amount of fuel needed to launch the rocket, which means less weight equals more profit. So now you're increasing their bottom line. That's the initial goal. The secondary goal long-term, as we continue to develop the technology, would be to actually create a vehicle that can launch and go into space using only this ferrofluid vortex engine and maneuvering thrusters. That's a long-term goal, you know. But everything looks really, really promising right now. It's been really already scientifically proven. We're not breaking any laws of physics. You know, this really, really does seem to work. So we've got, you know, people working on it right now, techs working on it, aerospace engineers, quantum mechanics people. We got we got 3D printer people. We got CAD designers. I mean, just the list goes on and on. So we're really doing a lot of work right now trying to get this, you know, get this into from concept to reality. And so far, it looks pretty good.
How big is it? I mean, is it something that, I mean, help me understand what we're talking about here before we get back to the break so the audience understands what we're referring to. Is this going to take up a section of the rocket, or will it envelop the whole thing? We have 30 seconds.
Just a section. So in other words, anywhere from like maybe, for example, in an average room of 20 by 20, something that size. It can also be made to various different sizes as well. So depending on what the need is for, it can even be made to put in the back of a 18-wheeler to reduce the weight of the payload, which would save gas, you know, on the highway.
Right, right. Fascinating. Our guest tonight, Billy Carson, founder of Forbidden Knowledge. The links are over at Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. More with Billy after this short break. Stay with us. Welcome back to Coast AM, standing on this Sunday evening. Our guest tonight is Billy Carson. He's the founder of Forbidden Knowledge, but he's also the CEO of First Class Space Agency, which is based in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and he is developing space technology to help us get to space, and check this out, more efficiently. It's extraordinary technology. We'll pick up this conversation when we come back right after this short break. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. This is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Tonight, our guest, Billy Carson, founder of Forbidden Knowledge, but also the First Class Space Agency based out of Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And Billy, talking about this Vortex technology, is this something that can be patented? How does the patent office look at this type of technology? Do they put it in the perpetual motion machine category, or is this something that you can protect?
Well, we have an attorney working with it now. His name is Andy Zolmanowicz. He's a corporate attorney, one of the top attorneys really in Florida. But the perpetual motion patents are extremely difficult to get. Now, we have a few machines or tech that we're working on that work off that premise. And the reason why they're so difficult to get is because a lot of people have tried to, they've patented them and tried to come up with the actual tech, and the tech, for whatever reason, didn't work to its claims. So one of the things that we're doing is we're developing it. We're producing our own prototype. And as soon as we have a very, very small prototype, but it's just like some of the others where the electrical output is extremely small, but also the device is extremely small. So we're making a prototype right now that's about the size of just a little bit smaller than an SUV is the next step. So that's the one that we're working on right now. And when we get that to the stage, the trick really comes with gears and torque. And once we master that part of it, which looks like we will, theoretically, right now we've been able to see where we can make the adjustments, then the attorney will take it to the next step and get and secure that patent for us. But the ferrofluid vortex engine, that's operating on totally different principles, and that would definitely be able to get patented, because it's something that that it doesn't break any laws of physics. See, according to Newton's third law, the perpetual motion kind of, it bypasses the third law of motion, just like the EM drive or the M drive, some people call it, that NASA's using right now. They've finally gotten it past that stage where they've admitted that breaking Newton's third law is a possibility and you can still get propulsion. So now the M drive has actually been now peer-reviewed and made it into scientific journals. So it's a real science, a real technology that can work. So, little by little, as we grow up as human beings on this planet, technologically, we're discovering that that these laws are made to be bent, and some are also made to be broken.
Well, I am picturing something almost gyroscopish, except for at an extremely high RPM. We're talking about 60,000 RPM. Mm-hmm. But it's not actually an engine, although you're calling it an engine because of its construction. But right. It's not lifting the rocket. The rocket has its own engines. This device, this technology, lightens the payload, right? Am I understanding you? And it's spinning, and that's how it's done?
Well, it's spinning inside of a sealed steel torus, so you won't be able to even see the rotation
right.
of the Mercury. So it's rotating inside of a steel torus, looks like a steel donut, basically.
Sure.
And inside of that, it's rotating at an extremely high rate of speed, and it's electrified, and then it's encased again and encased again. But that will generate a bubble, and it can reduce the payload inside the actual, rocket, or the payload inside of a ship, the payload inside of an 18-wheeler. It could be anywhere. Now, and for future technology, it can definitely be harnessed or installed underneath a spacecraft, and it could be in the center of the spacecraft, kind of like what we see in the TR-3B, a rotator ring in the center underneath the flying triangle.
Right.
That's probably something similar to what they're using there. I know they have a combination of nuclear power as well, or what they're doing, but it'll be directly underneath a spacecraft, directly in the center, underneath, creating this anti-gravity effect, and then allowing maneuvering thrusters to for directional purposes, fly by wire as well, will then control you know, angle, altitude, ascend, descend, and everything else. But the gravity, anti-gravity bubble will help with things like G-forces. So making these crazy maneuvers in the sky won't have the same effect as the pilot on the pilot as a normal pilot would in like an F-18 or something.
What kind of energy source does this need?
Well, the energy source, that's something that we can't talk about yet. That's creating the the rotating, that's helping to create the RPMs. But that's another technology that we're developing with our batteries and crystals. We can't give out the exact name of that yet and how exactly it works, because that's part of the trick of the whole thing.
Right.
But it's going to be an internal power source, that'll be used to create this RPM. And some of the movement of the Mercury in the Taurus goes back into generating energy that goes back into the system again, almost like how an electric car, like the one in Africa that they have, this gentleman developed one in Africa that works like the Tesla, but when you brake, it takes the braking energy and recycles it back into the batteries again. So it converts the braking energy back into the batteries for more power used to propel the car further. So it never needs to be plugged in. So this is the same kind of concept is being used with this as well.
Now, can it be miniaturized? And I don't mean to be cavalier here or to make fun, but it sounds like it would be really cool for a Back to the Future hoverboard.
Oh, that would be fantastic. I know. Yeah, we're working on a lot of crazy stuff like that, believe it or not. One of the things that a lot of this funding is coming through is we're developing our own Starfleet. And in Starfleet, we're going to have the biggest and the best minds, the youngest and the best minds, because we really want fresh thinkers. And we're going to be developing things like hoverboards and a lot of the technologies that you've seen, on TV, on some of these space shows like Star Trek and Star Wars and everything else, and kind of taking it from doing it in reverse, taking it from Hollywood. Well, a lot of people have done it already in technology, and then seeing how we can make it a real plausible tech in our current era, our current time. And that's one of the things that we're doing.
How open is NASA and Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos to this type of technology and free thinking?
Oh, they're very open, especially Elon Musk. He's probably one of the more open ones.
Have you spoken to him?
I haven't talked to him personally. Damon Dash, who's the entertainment mogul, entertainment guru, multimillionaire, who's on our board of directors now and actually the director of operations for First Class Space Agency, has directly talked to him. And they've had conversations also in the past about, the electric car, the battery. At one point, Elon Musk was actually running out of funding when he was launching the Tesla. And Damon Dash was actually producing his own electric car, but they couldn't get a battery that worked as good as Tesla's battery. And a lot of the techs that were working with Tesla had actually left his facility and went over to Damon's facility. But at the last minute, the funding came through, and a lot of the techs, since they were already, 90% done with their project, they went back over there. But there's definitely a relationship. They hang out, they talk together, they meet in these places, and they have conversations or whatever. But so that those conversations are very, very easy to get.
Are you saying that Elon has been exposed to your vortex?
I'm saying that Damon Dash has talked to him, and a lot of people know about it. Put it that way. A lot of people are well aware of what we've got going on.
Now, and then we have the other side of things where this type of technology comes along and it is going to interfere with the profits and profitability of other companies out there that work in a more traditional sense. And suddenly people disappear. The technology disappears. It's bought and it's gone. Are you prepared for that? Have you thought about it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. See, right now it's the perfect timing because everybody is trying to move away from the conventional methods and take everything to the next level. Like the green light, the switch has been flipped up and said, okay, you guys are now allowed as a civilization to push the envelope a little bit. We're going to give you a little bit more leeway. You can now look into other forms of propulsion, different ways of generating electricity, like the gentleman who developed the balloon box, he was literally a contract with NASA, just like my company is, to develop a way to extract carbon dioxide from the atmosphere on Mars and push out oxygen. That was his technology. However, through the process of developing this box, he made a little bit of a mistake, which made a discovery. And through the chemical process, he discovered that by reversing it, he was able to not push out carbon dioxide and by sucking in oxygen, but he was able to actually generate electricity. So this Bloom Box was fully developed, partially funded by NASA, and now it powers the Google University. So Google University is not powered by the power grid. It's got its own separate box called the Bloom Box, the Bloom Server, and it's this big, huge, looks like an 18-wheeler outside the side of the building, and it's plugged into that. And it just takes electromagnetic waves out of the atmosphere, combines them with sand on these flat disks, and then literally there's another little magic process in between, but that technology converts it into electricity that the building uses to power itself.
Without anything traditional involved, this almost sounds like Tesla technology.
Yeah, it's amazing stuff. Now, only a few Fortune 500 companies have been able to get the Bloom Server. I tried to get one myself because when I was developing Fort Terra Nova back in 2012, this tells you how old this is. I wanted to, instead of using a turbine diesel engine for my underground shelter, I wanted to use that because I was like, wow, now I don't have to store all this fuel, which gives me more space, which means I can help more people. Right now I can only hold 360 people underground. So this Bloom Server would have been great, but they contacted me back and told me that unfortunately that they've only been able to sell it to a few Fortune 500 companies, and the rest is all now military. So
now, what do you say to those right now that are listening to this conversation where they're going, come on, this is too good to be true. This is pie in the sky stuff. This is just another technology that's brought along by somebody, but it goes against everything. It goes against thermodynamics. It goes against all of the basic laws of physics. And this is impossible. What do you say to those critics?
Well, I say to them, you know, they've got to really delve deep into some quantum mechanics and quantum physics. That's really where a lot of the new technology being developed goes. It doesn't stay in standard physics. Standard physics is going to give you combustion engines and fossil fuel. And that's where we're moving out of that now. The whole world's moving out of that. They realize that they have to. And so you've got to start pushing the envelope, and you've got to go into alternative modes of propulsion and movement and acceleration and everything else. And one of the things that's a true possibility, and I believe probably it's already been developed by DARPA, some of these other black budget programs, are ferrofluid vortex engines that have the capability of doing this. Now, for people who say that they're skeptical of this kind of technology, just look at the M drive. Okay, the M drive, which was talked about being mythical, and it was laughed at, and everybody was told it would never happen, and nobody would ever be able to use it. Well, I think NASA took it a little seriously. Not only did they look into it, they actually worked on it and actually did some tests on their own, and discovered that the M drive really can create propulsion with no rocket fuel at all, with no propellant. No ferrofluid vortex, nothing. It just uses microwaves inside of a cone. And by bouncing these microwaves off the cone, it creates acceleration. Extremely slow in the beginning, but over time, it never slows down. It just continues to build. So your rocket ship will go from zero to a percentage of the speed of light over a specific amount of months, and it'll give you the ability to travel far outside our solar system.
So
China beat us to it. So China has actually taken it up on a satellite, and they've actually used the M drive.
Right.
It's something that went from being laughed at and scoffed and told it was a sham and a scam and it would never work, and it's just sucking in money for research and development and so forth and so on. And now all of a sudden, China beat us to it. We've tested it and said that it worked. China took it into real life in third dimension and put it up in space.
So your ferrofluid vortex does a few things. One, it will decrease the weight of the payload, so you can have a larger payload.
Right.
You'll use less fuel, potentially even using a smaller rocket engine. and also increase distance. It's nothing but a win-win, right? Yeah. Am I understanding this correctly?
That is correct. That is absolutely correct. Yeah.
And why, what's stopping this?
Well, the thing that's stopping in the past has always been funding, you know. It's been a big problem. It's always getting access to funding. The front company for space, which is NASA and the European Space Agency, those front companies, they are going by, you know, they have been developing advanced technology behind the scenes as well. And some of it they've incorporated into some current designs. You know, however, the majority of the stuff is always, you know, very, very basic, you know, rocket fuel and, you know, very, very simple navigation technologies. I mean, our cell phones have the same capability as some of the technology on some of these craft. But now, you know, the big thing is behind the scenes has always been people trying to develop these technologies and where they're going to get the funding from. So we've kind of beat the funding problem down, and we've got the funding. I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, I sent you a few documents. I can tell you the amounts. You know, one is $100 million, another one is $20 million. $120 million that we're working with already, which you've seen the documentation.
I have.
The signatures.
I have.
The companies.
I have.
Yeah. So and we have access to an unlimited amount now of funding as well. So the funding is not an issue anymore. Now it's just a matter of setting up shop. We're opening up in a big conglomerate tech office in San Francisco, where you have security for your IP there. And then we're also building out a fresh laboratory from scratch in Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
Accepting applications? I need a gig.
Yes, we are. We've got about 400 applications already, but we're definitely accepting. We're looking for the best and the brightest minds, young minds to come in. And we're going to have some older minds, too, because they have to have some leadership. But we want fresh ideas, want fresh, you know, a fresh mindset, you know, clean and pure. You know, when a tree is very small and young, the limbs are able to bend. But when a tree gets older, if you're trying to bend the limbs, they snap. We want fresh minds out there working with us.
Billy, this is it's pretty unbelievable, right? And yep. And you know me pretty well. Mm-hmm. And we're good friends, but even I, with our relationship, have to step back a little bit and go, some things are just too good to be true.
Yeah, it's amazing, man. I mean, it really is an amazing thing. You know, somebody was able to see the vision. Ace Goldsby, a Triumphant Group,
right,
and Terrence Johnson over at TCJ Aerotech. TCJ Aerotech is a $1 billion tech company out of Atlanta. And he's one of the main people that has helped me to get access to the funding. His drone company provides drones for military governments around the world, and also not only in the air, but also deep sea drones as well. So he trains them on it. So he's the one who helped me make the connections. They saw the vision, and we're developing something that, you know, hasn't been done yet on this planet.
Stay right there, Billy. We got to take a break, but when we come back, we'll take some phone calls. This is Coast to Coast AM.